Welcome to Season 3 of Love in Context. This season, we're exploring the life of Jesus, step by step, and uncovering what his story teaches us about loving God and others. Here on Love in Context, we're all about having real conversations about how to live out that love in practical, everyday ways, and understanding the Bible in its full context. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive into Season 3 of Love and Context.
Welcome to Season 3!
I know.
Of the Love and Context podcast.
Pretty much, yeah. So we're going to be shifting gears this season, and we're actually just going to talk about football the whole time.
We're going to be talking about football.
Football the whole time. Yeah. So,
That's actually really strange, though, because most of this season is going to premiere when there's no football.
Uh-huh.
So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's just going to be what it is. And I'm joking. We're not going
to
be talking about
Well, I was going to say, with an increase in the ratings, we might be able to like garner some of that NFL money, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I was actually
totally. Yeah. we're actually going to be shifting gears, and we spent a lot of time in the Old Testament the last couple seasons.
Yep.
And so we are going to be spending some time in the four Gospels.
And what he's actually saying is we're finally going to talk about Jesus. Mm-hmm. This is the first time in 3 years we've talked about Jesus.
Well, that's not true. I mean, I've talked about Jesus with lots of people these last 3 years, but
well, no, I'm talking
what
about
have you been doing?
I'm talking about on the podcast.
Well, I still want to know why you haven't been talking to people about Jesus.
I have been talking to people about Jesus. On the podcast, though, is what we're talking about.
Ben's already like, oh, dear Lord, what got into Spencer?
I have a suspicion, and the it's C-O-F-F-E-E. That's what got into Spencer, and an absurd amount of it.
This is what my third cup today, I think.
Yeah. So we were talking about, one of the things we want to kind of do is we want to do, have a conversation about the life of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And, we've kind of sketched out over the next 35 episodes, like covering Jesus's life chronologically.
Yeah.
Which also means that we're going to harmonize the Gospels, meaning that we're going to take from different portions of the accounts because they're not all going to focus on the exact same portions of his life.
Yeah.
And, so one of the reasons, like, I think when we were talking about we should start out, we should actually talk about, like, the focus of each gospel because we're going to be jumping in at random points throughout the story. Mm-hmm. And, like, what is each gospel and how is it written and why is it written that way? Is it just four different accounts from four different dudes or is there a reason that it's written that way?
Yeah.
And the other thing is once we get through the life of Jesus, we may actually come back and zero in on, like, a few stories and then just have a deeper conversation about that. Mm-hmm. Before we close up the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
So first thing we got to do is we got to talk about the four Gospels, right? Mm-hmm. Gospel is a Greek word. Euangelion means good news. Mm-hmm. It is not a unique word to the Bible.
Nope.
We were actually just talking about in the end of last season, we were talking about Caesar Augustus, right? And it was very common for both Greek and Roman conquerors, when they would come in, they would say, hey, there is the good news of the kingdom of Caesar Augustus. Mm-hmm. There is the good news of the kingdom of Alexander the Great, right?
Yeah.
And basically what it is a pronouncement of a new kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always good news, especially if you're the conqueror. It's always good news for everybody. Yep. And in this case, it actually is really good news. So gospel... one of the reasons I like the way that they write it in the translations, they say the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, according to Matthew.
Yeah.
Right? The good news of Jesus Christ according to Mark.
Mm-hmm.
The good news of Jesus Christ according to Luke, and the good news of Jesus Christ according to John.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think that's really important is they're all going to focus on, like, what is this pronouncement, and what does it mean for a specific group of people?
Yeah.
And focusing on that. So... with that in mind, let's talk about Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you are named Matthew, and like your ears just started burning. You're like, oh man, they're going to talk about me.
That's what we're here to do, is just gossip about you. All the Matthews of the world.
All the Matthews of the world. Uh-huh.
We know a few of them.
Yeah.
So the Gospel of Matthew is actually an interesting one because Matthew is predominantly writing to a Jewish audience.
Correct. And this is going to be Matthew the tax collector. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yes, a Jew, but on the outside of society. So he's writing to a Jewish audience.
Yeah. So that's why you see things like a lineage at the beginning of it, mm-hmm. is because he's actually And within that lineage, we could spend weeks talking on that because there's a lot of stuff there. Mm-hmm. But within that lineage, you'll actually see the life of Abraham all the way down to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's specific people that are listed, but what he's doing is he's painting this picture of saying, hey, all these people leading up to Jesus aren't perfect.
Right.
And he paints that picture in this lineage. And so you go throughout Matthew, and you can see in the way he writes and structures everything, it's written in a perspective that intentionally ties back to Torah.
Yeah, there is a I'm going to borrow a word from Marty Solomon when he was talking about this. He says that Matthew, he uses the word mumser.
Yeah.
It's this person who is kind of on the outside of fellowship, which would make sense with the tax collector, mm-hmm. right? This person who's kind of like on the outside. And Jesus's message is about being brought in. Now, what's a very prominent story in Matthew 5? It's a Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with this pronouncement of all these people you think are on the outside are being welcomed in.
Yep.
Right? And you were talking about the lineage. Who shows up in the lineage? Oh, Bathsheba,
mm-hmm.
Rahab, Tamar.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Women. Women aren't supposed to show up in a genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they do in Matthew because it's these awkward, weird stories, not just with the women, but there's awkward, weird stories that show up in the genealogy of Jesus in yeah. Matthew, that these people who are on the outside in the stories are actually the ones who are central to the messianic figure.
Yeah.
Right? So there's going to be a really heavy emphasis mm-hmm. throughout Matthew on the Old Testament and Jesus stepping into the role of Israel.
Yep.
Throughout the book, and also a lot of reliance on like Jewish idioms, Jewish ideas. I think in Matthew, there's the 8 great rabbinic debates, mm-hmm. and they're all covered in the book of Matthew, which would make total sense,
mm-hmm.
right? Jesus is all throughout the book of Matthew kind of portrayed as this second Moses,
mm-hmm.
right? Strong emphasis on the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
Right. What does that actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
Some things that are unique to the Gospel of Matthew is the visit of the Magi,
mm-hmm.
The massacre of the innocents. By the way, if massacre of the innocents, if he's doing the second Moses, is going to be a big one to include. Yeah. And then Judas's suicide. Mm-hmm. Those are actually unique to the Gospel of Matthew.
Yeah.
As far as dating. You should talk to your parents about it, unless you're an adult, and then you can date all you want.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like dating, there's a lot of conversation. And by the way, TikTok and Instagram, there's a lot of people going on there talking about how the Bible was written hundreds of years later. They've dated the book of Matthew between 80 and 90 AD, and some scholars have suggested between 70 and 110.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus dying in roughly 30, 35, this means that the Gospel of Matthew is written down in its codified form within the next 40 years.
Yeah.
Like pretty recently.
Mm-hmm. As far as ancient history goes, it's pretty recently.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the big thing is that people who were there
mm-hmm.
would still be alive.
Yeah.
If not Matthew himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about like a story of authenticity, like this is not hundreds of years removed after it's had time to shape in culture. This is really, really close to the actual date of the events.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Gentiles. We talked about the Magi. Some focuses in the book of Matthew is he's going to talk about a lot of ministry to the marginalized.
Yep.
Right. Talk about the outcasts, the sinners, the poor, focus a lot on women. There's the one where he talks about, there's the praise of the Canaanite woman,
mm-hmm.
right? He praises her as a Gentile woman, which is just unheard of in Jewish books. Inclusion talking about how great her faith is.
Yeah.
there's also going to be this great commission that it's not about just hearing and receiving. It's about going.
Yep.
Right. This is going to be a part of the Matthews. And the other thing is, which I feel like is kind of pairing with this marginalized, is there going to be this almost rejection of the religious leaders?
Yeah.
Right? Of the insiders is what I'm going to call them.
Mm-hmm.
Parables like the wedding banquet.
Yep.
Right? And talking about Israel's rejection and the Gentiles actually being mm-hmm. brought in, and about how it's, yes, first to the Jew, but now the Gentiles are actually being brought into the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then we said like a lot of prophecy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was last season, it may have been the season before, we were talking about the Gospel of Matthew, and there's a conversation about whether or not it was originally written in Hebrew.
There is.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so there is a conversation, was it originally written in Hebrew or Greek? end of the day, doesn't really matter too much.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter too much. If you're a nerd like me and you like to nerd out on these facts, I'm going to give you just a couple of things real quick because I just think they're fun. So the reason that comes from, it comes from a Greek person named Papias in 100 to 130 AD, and he's quoted by Eusebius, who has a collection of writings in the early church.
Yeah.
And the statement says, Matthew compiled the sayings of Jesus in a Hebrew dialect, and everyone translated them as he was able. Some people, church fathers such as Irenaeus, Origen, and Jerome have also suggested this afterwards. Linguistic people disagree with the current version of Matthew because the Gospel of Matthew is written in really polished Greek. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to have been there's idioms that are in Hebrew that have been well translated from Hebrew into Greek, that it wouldn't just be a Hebrew word translated in, or else it wouldn't sound right. I am not a linguist, so please do not take my word for it.
Yeah.
And then also there's frequent use when he's quoting backwards to different Old Testament passages where he's using the Septuagint. I think it's more likely something along the lines of this, is that originally as Matthew is writing down the sayings of Jesus, he's writing them down in Hebrew, and that as they go to actually codify and he actually goes to put out an entire good news, he writes it in Greek because he wants not just the Hebrews to be able to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably won't know until we go ask him.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there.
Yep. And again, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter too much.
Yeah.
So.
It does matter. It does matter.
To you.
It matters to me. And this one said, it does matter.
To
it does
you.
It matter to me. And then the last thing to remember is Matthew is most likely written to Jewish Christians after the destruction of the temple,
mm-hmm.
right? In AD 90, grappling with their identity and now the separation from Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do now that we don't have our temple?
Yeah.
Right?
That brings us to the Gospel of Mark.
Mark. Mm-hmm. So, speculation on this being John Mark.
Yeah. So there is, there actually is debate about authorship on this,
mm-hmm.
Whether it was John Mark. There's a couple other people who were named Mark that have also been, this has been attributed to. There's also the attribution that Peter wrote it
mm-hmm.
and Mark just scribed it.
Right.
And so there's a number of different debates on authorship here. With that said, it doesn't really matter too much at this
point. And I think that we should probably, there's a good conversation mm-hmm. about debating about authorship and authenticity are not the same thing.
No.
Because none of the early church debated whether or not Mark was a gospel penned by the apostles or is a story of an apostle
mm-hmm.
Writing about this. It's the conversation about, was it penned by John Mark? Was it penned by Peter?
Yeah.
You know, that's the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, from an English, from a translation perspective, I had a friend once describe it as the NASCAR gospel.
Right.
Because it has phrases like, and then, all of a sudden, and it just makes it feel like everything happened in 35 minutes.
And then they.
Right.
And then they did this. And then they did this.
Yeah.
Right.
When really those are pauses of time, if you look at it from a Greek authorship perspective.
Yeah.
But, so Mark does have this feel to where it's a lot more faster paced, a lot quicker. And with that said, it was also targeted to a very different audience.
Yeah, there's conversation that's really being geared toward Christians in the Roman mm-hmm. church. This, by the way, is one of the is most likely the earliest of the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
They place it around 65 to 70 AD and under Emperor Nero, likely receiving persecution.
Yeah.
A lot of this is written in a very Roman style. So Roman would be this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. So it's following very similar. So now these Jews and these Gentiles that are followers of Jesus in the Roman culture, and they're under persecution from Nero. In fact, if you actually go to the end of Mark, Mark 16, and you have this little footnote that says some of the earliest manuscripts didn't include this. If you actually take the first ending, it kind of leaves you in this really big piece of tension,
mm-hmm.
right? Jesus has come back and he's revealed, and then they have to go away and decide if they're going to tell the story or not.
Yeah.
Which, if you're in a persecuted nation, is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Is the revelation greater than the persecution?
Yeah.
Which is something that you struggle with when you're a persecuted church, right?
Yeah.
When you're underneath... I'm going to say persecution again because I can't think of another word for persecution. Where's my thesaurus when I need it? It is, it's just something that's going to be, you know, encouraging, much like the book of Revelation is very encouraging to a church and, trials.
Mm-hmm. Mark also has a, you alluded to this, but it also has a bit of scrutiny about it, as far as which manuscripts are accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So as you alluded in Mark 16, there's the first ending, then there's the second ending.
Mm-hmm.
And depending what Bible you have, you might have the second ending in there. It might be excluded. It just depends on what manuscript they're using to translate it.
Yeah.
And so there is actually debate among scholars on which manuscript came first.
Correct.
And reality is we don't know, and that's okay.
I believe that the entirety is, I think that you can take away two things. I think you can look at where it ends and understand how it communicates to a persecuted church, but then also understand that the other part of it very well may have been tacked on by Mark or the apostles around the same time, because they're sending it to different places. So you might have had one gospel they sent to one place and then like the other one that they had like another ending, to like maybe 10 years later.
Yeah.
Right. For me, when I read these, they're all harmonious with the Word of God, and they all connect with the Old Testament and the structure of God. And I have no doubt in my mind or soul that every piece is God-breathed.
Yeah.
Right? So we're not doubting authenticity or God-breathed inspiration. We just don't know exactly how in history those were formed.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that shows up frequently in Mark, which, by the way, if you grew up in the church, you're going to hear a lot of Mark quoted whenever you're talking about the suffering servant, because he really spends a lot of time connecting back to Isaiah.
Yeah.
And then also this, one of the things that's also going to show up often is the messianic secret. In other words, Jesus is going to say, don't tell them about me. Don't tell them about me. Nobody listens.
Mm-hmm.
Like they do it anyways.
Yeah. Right.
But it's going to happen very frequently through this and like this revelation that's happening almost in secret as the kingdom continues to explore out there. By the way, if you're once again a persecuted nation, this might have some resonance for you, right?
Yeah.
So that's the Gospel of Mark. Now, the Gospel of Luke, you really need to connect with the book of Acts because it's really two parts of the same book.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, and Luke, by the way, doesn't even hide that. He says that he goes to make an orderly account, and then the beginning of the book of Acts, he's like, in my former account, I wrote about this, and now I'm going to write about what the church did.
Yeah.
Right? So he's not making a secret of it.
Mm-mm.
Luke is written, speculated between 80 and 90 AD, maybe a little bit later, written to a predominantly Gentile audience in a Greco and Roman context. And it's a lot about getting an orderly account, but then Luke specifically is going to be dealing with eyewitness accounts, people who were alive in the time of Jesus and what they saw and heard.
Yeah.
Right. One of the things that Luke does differently is Luke also has a genealogy, which has tripped people up for years. Because he actually focuses on something different. So in Matthew, he focuses and goes through all the way back to Abraham. And and Abraham, David, and Joseph are like real big focus points, right? In Luke's account, we go all the way back to Adam, and it seems to be more inclusive of humanity overall, not just a specifically Jewish heritage. And next week, we're actually going to be talking about the genealogy, so I don't want to talk about too much.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like, when you start to understand like what they're doing inside of those, there's a reason they're written that way. And it's totally appropriate for Eastern literature.
Yeah.
It's not how we write literature, but it is correct for how they do it.
Yep.
So he presents this well-researched orderly account. Actually, I'm going to read this from, this is from the, Luke 1:1-4. Since many have undertook, wow, I can speak English well.
Well done.
Since many have undertaken to compile a narrative about the events that have been fulfilled among us, just as the original eyewitnesses and servants of the word handed them down to us, it also seemed good to me, since I have carefully investigated everything from the very first, to write to you in a orderly sequence, most honorable Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things about which you have been instructed. So, likely Theophilus is somebody of some renown that came to Jesus and commissions Luke. He says, hey, I want to make sure that what I'm placing my faith in actually happened.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, well, I'll just go eyewitness everybody and I'll write you an account of what they say. right? And then, of course, in Acts, he says, in my former book, Theophilus, I wrote about all that Jesus said and did. And then he starts to write about what the church then does from that porch. Yeah. So here's what ordered approach would mean in that it's a carefully investigated account. So he emphasizes that he's researched thoroughly by compiling all the eyewitnesses and earlier accounts so that you're going to have a lot of overlap with Matthew and Mark. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, that's why you're not also going to have a lot of overlap with John, because the Gospel of John is going to be written later.
Yes.
And then his Gospel then reflects a historian's attention to detail. There's going to be some chronological and thematic structure, birth of John the Baptist, Jesus, then his ministry in Galilee, his journey to Jerusalem, and finally his death, burial, resurrection, right, mm-hmm. and ascension.
Yeah.
He specifically says, I wrote this so that you could be certain that what you've placed your faith in happen, mm-hmm. right? So this is meant to try to get as much as accounts as possible to say this is what they said happened.
Yeah.
And so you're going to, there's thousands of people who saw Jesus mm-hmm. after he was resurrected, at least 500.
Yeah.
Because that's what one of the Gospels tells us. Mm-hmm. But it's meant to give certainty and credence as a thoroughly, you know, Luke being a learned man, a doctor, he's going to be capable of doing thorough research. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I have found particularly interesting, and it is I've hinted at this in the past, but in early synagogues, they do readings called the Parashah and the Haftarah. Mm-hmm. The Parashah readings is the readings of Torah that they do every week.
Yeah.
And every year they make it all the way through Torah, and then they repeat the next year. The Haftarah is everything else, and they make it through it every 3 years. So it's the reading cycle syncs up every 3 years. Incidentally, when Jesus comes and it's his turn to read in Nazareth, and he reads from the scroll of Isaiah, it's the Haftarah reading, right? Like that's part of their regular reading. So one of the things that we talk about in the Gospel of Luke, and is a conversation piece, and some scholars are piecing together, and there's an interesting perspective on, is whether or not Luke's ordered account, the way that it's split up, connects with a Parashah and Haftarah reading for a Jewish synagogue with Christians that are now a part of it.
Yeah.
So that they're having the Old Testament, the Law and Prophets. The Law, the Prophets is what I'm going to call them, and then the Gospel, mm-hmm. right? And so they're actually pairing these three together. And one of the things that's really compelling is that I've seen one of these calendars, and they're really intricate.
Yeah.
But sometimes the Parashah reading, and then the Haftarah reading, and then the story from the Gospel of Luke, and you're like, wow, those line up so well mm-hmm. that you almost think, like, that has to be it.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't quite work in our calendar because our calendar is slightly different.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting about whether or not that is the case. That is just something for you guys to think about. There's no direct evidence of that, mm-hmm. but there is compelling scholarship in it. So if you're a nerd like me, I know they're there. Mm-hmm. There's at least one person who listens who's a nerd like me.
Yep.
And you want to look into that. There is the Evangelist Calendar is a book. It's really difficult to get a hold of, and I'm not going to agree with about 45% of what the guy has his conclusions are, but he has some really interesting, like, he's lined up some different dates, and it's really interesting if you're willing to do the work.
Yeah.
It's an old book.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the final.
Mm-hmm. Most gospel. Controversial.
The Gospel of John. Now, the Gospel of John is very different from the other three Gospels. Mm-hmm. There's actually debate on whether John actually wrote events in order or not. Mm-hmm. Like, there's debate around that. John also, he doesn't include a genealogy. He just kind of jumps right into life of Jesus. There's no early childhood, no birth story, none of that. Mm-hmm. And John is really trying to do one thing. He's trying to show that Jesus is the Messiah.
Yeah. In fact, he actually says that very, very, very plainly.
Very plainly.
Says, this gospel is written so that
you may know.
You may know, right? Yeah.
And so John's not trying to hide that. That's what his gospel is written. Now, his gospel is really split into two parts. There's the first part, which is all of Jesus' life except for 1 week. Mm-hmm. And so that part seems a little rushed at times. Like, it seems like, oh, story, 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 story. And then you get to John chapter 12, and it turns into the second part, which is the last week.
Yeah, and there's like, it ends up being like 12 chapters that cover 1 week.
Yeah, and
it's very strange.
And you go from these just these accounts of these stories, these miracles, to where you get to John like 13 through 17, and it's like one conversation.
Correct.
So you have two separate paces that are happening in this gospel. And I think a lot of times people miss that in the Gospel of John.
Right.
Where the other gospels have a little bit more of a fluid pace. John's gospel is like, here's a really rushed story, and oh, by the way, we're going to pause for this one conversation, which, yeah, by the way, should make you be like, I should pause for this one conversation too.
Correct, yeah. There is a couple of themes that are going on throughout the Gospel of John. One is light and dark.
Yep.
Another one is you're going to see the seven I am statements, mm-hmm, of Jesus. John is going to focus heavily on Jesus's divinity.
Yep.
And so one of the things, the criticisms of the Gospel of John is that it comes much later. It doesn't actually come that much later. It comes like 15 years later.
Yeah.
Right? Early on, they couldn't find ones that weren't like from AD 160. Mm-hmm. But after they found scrolls of Qumran, they found them that were much earlier.
Yeah.
Right? And so John is writing specifically, because it seems to be that he didn't see the particular need to write a gospel, because they had three accounts that were really good.
Yeah.
And then there arose this thing called Gnosticism, mm-hmm, spelled with a G. So if you're looking it up and Googling it, it's GN. So Gnosticism. And one of the things about the Gnostic is whether or not Jesus was really divine. Was he really fully man, fully God? Was he spirit? Was he, you know, there's a lot, yeah, of these conversations about that. They get further from his death. There's people rising up and saying, well, Jesus never actually occupied a physical body. And John's like, incorrect. All right, we got to address this, because Matthew, Mark, and Luke do address it. Mm-hmm. Like, but they address it in very Jewish ways.
Yeah.
And John is like, no, I need to make sure that we're very clear. Like, I was there. I felt the nail holes in his arms, mm-hmm, right? I felt the spear hole in his side, mm-hmm, right? Like, Jesus was very much a physical person.
Yeah.
And he was also very much definitely God.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't understand that at the time, but it was happening all along.
Yeah. John, the Gospel of John, this probably is not in your notes, but the Gospel of John also has a bit more of a sense of humor to it.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, you see this when they're running to Jesus' tomb, where John's like, yeah, Peter was running, but the other disciple, referring to himself, he's like, outran him and got there first. Right? So John has a little bit more of this edge to it, which fits John's personality, because John is also the apostle. He's also one of the apostles that when Jesus and the disciples got kicked out of a town, John's like, so we're calling hellfire and brimstone down on them? Like, this is Sodom and Gomorrah, right? This is what's happening?
No.
And Jesus is like, no.
My favorite part about that story is he's like, let's burn them down. And Jesus goes, no. Go preach the good news to the lost sheep of Israel.
Uh-huh.
That's definitely a strategy for pastors.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So John is the only gospel writer that's published here that actually was had one of the more fiery personalities.
Mm-hmm.
The other writers, Matthew was much more calculated. Luke was very calculated. Mark, there's some debate on authorship there, but John, he was kind of the fiery disciple who's like, I'm, mm-hmm, going to write a gospel, and this is what I'm going to.
Him and his brother James.
Oh, yeah.
They're literally called the Sons of Thunder. Can you imagine being so disruptive that they call you the Sons of Thunder?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, we assume it's probably like a playful moniker.
Yeah.
Right? But it's, yeah. I wanted to just talk about, because we kind of danced around it, but key ways that John tells you what his gospel is about, right? There's an explicit purpose statement, which is in John 20, 31, mm-hmm, where he says, this is why I wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It doesn't get much more explicit than that.
Yeah.
Then his focus on Jesus' identity, his divinity as eternal word, logos, who is with God and is God, mm-hmm, his I am statements connecting him to Yeshua, or to Yahweh, mm-hmm. I am that I am, which gets him in trouble, by the way, when he makes that statement multiple times. It's going to be his signs and wonders specifically are pointing towards his divinity as well.
Yeah.
Right? The prologue, where how it opens, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, should absolutely evoke feelings of Genesis 1.
Yep.
In other words, he is God that was spoken word in the beginning.
Yep.
Which is what he'll actually say in the prologue.
Yep.
And it's really important to like to hear those things. There's going to be themes of like, if you believe, you will have eternal life. If you follow after me, you'll have eternal life. This qualitative life comes from life with Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And then his discourses in general are going to exclude extensive teachings where he's explaining his mission to people.
Yeah.
So think about John 3, where he talks with Nicodemus, and he's like, I came so that everybody would be saved. Mm-hmm. And then in the next chapter, he meets a woman at a well. So a religious figure, woman at a well. And he says, I am the Messiah that's come so that you can actually worship in spirit and truth.
Yeah.
Right? And so he's actually explaining to people exactly why he's there.
Yeah.
Now, they don't get it.
Yeah.
Right? They still think Messiah differently, mm-hmm. but he's absolutely explaining in these stories exactly who Jesus is.
Yeah.
One of the other cool things that you can... The Gospel of John, the first time you read it, you're like, man, that's really cool. And you're like... Then the second time you read it, you're like, oh, there's a theme I didn't track.
Mm-hmm.
Then you read it a third time, you're like, oh, there's another theme I didn't track. Mm-hmm. Then the 28th time you read it, they're like, that's another theme I didn't track. Mm-hmm. And then you're color-coding these things all the way through. And then you read something about history and faiths that were, religions that were really coming up and popular during that time. And you're like, oh, my goodness. Now he's doing a play on words with that religion and mm-hmm. Jesus and really, like, usurping everything that they're being told and also using the Jewish, like, Torah
yeah.
at the same time. And you're like, this is crazy, John.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. It's yeah. it's almost like he had help.
Yeah, right.
Right? And it's one of those books that the more time you spend in it, the more it is, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's so incredible.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that you can do to do a disservice to John is not spend a whole lot of time really unpacking all these layers of things he has in it.
Yep.
I've spent years in it, and every time I read it, I find something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that God's just cool that way.
Yep.
So all of these Gospels come together to tell the story of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
They all talk about Jesus in different ways, either addressing like other things that are rising up, like people, the way people think about Jesus. John is redirecting them.
Mm-hmm.
Mark talking to a persecuted church. Matthew talking to the people who are on the outside or they're being brought in. Luke giving an order to counsel you would actually know from like testimonies.
Yeah.
You know? And all these are working together to really tell this story of Jesus. And some of them are going to tell it different ways. Just like if you and I were in a room and we experienced the same story, we probably remember different things from it.
Yep.
But all of them together help us like understand like who is Jesus? Yep. Who was he on earth? What was his ministry? So that as we trust in his death, burial, resurrection, we have new life in his teachings.
Yeah.
And in the commission he gives us to live out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So as we explore the life of Jesus, we're going to be referencing all four of these Gospels because as much as they're telling a different story, they are talking about the same Jesus.
Correct.
They're not trying to say there was four different Jesus. All right? They're saying there's one Jesus, one Messiah, mm-hmm. one Savior, and they're all telling the story from a different perspective, right? And so as we explore this, just know that we'll be doing some cross-referencing and there might be some things that you're like, huh, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way. Just go with it. It's going to be good. We're excited.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Welcome to season 3. Let's dive in. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope this conversation encouraged you and gave you fresh insights into how we can better love God and others through the powerful truths of the Bible. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions, thoughts, or suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. Your feedback means the world to us and helps shape future episodes. Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Be sure to hit that follow button and join our growing community. Thanks for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in today's world.